So, welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club, and I'm here today with Jeanette.
Hi.
Lisa.
Oh, look, I've just got too many questions. Just skip past me.
We've got Alex.
Hey.
Gypsy.
Hello.
And Angus.
Hello.
And this particular episode, we've gone fully virtual in coronavirus. So we're all doing it from separate locations. So the sound quality may be a bit different than normal.
Yeah.
I just like our introductions.
Yeah. Not looking at anyone in particular. Lisa.
I'm the second one, not Lisa. I'm putting my microphone as far away from my face as possible. I apologize in advance.
Today we're looking at Babylon 5. And what is Babylon 5, Jeanette?
My favourite TV show.
Oh, your favourite TV show.
I got hugely hooked on this back in the 90s. It's a American sci-fi series. There were five seasons. It's set on a space station that was set up to be a diplomatic station after a major intergalactic war. It's a arc that covers 5 years, and this is one of the crucial episodes where everything just flips over and changes.
So the episode we're watching is The Coming of Shadows, and that's from season two, and it's just the early part of season two. It's episode 9, I think.
Yes.
And it was aired in 95, is that right? I think that's right. Oh, just wait. You're consulting a book here. What's this book you're consulting?
I've got multiple books.
You've got multiple books.
It's great that we're using computers to do this and we don't just Google it. We just go, oh, I don't know. Let's look it up. Oh,
if you're a regular listener, you know that Jeanette has got like a book compendium for every type of classic cult TV show that's come out.
It aired on February 1st, 1995.
And Angus, did you use the internet for that?
I did use the internet for that, yeah.
You can use it for more than one reason.
Sorry.
These excellent books here. We've got The Babylon File, The Definitive Unauthorized Guide to J. Michael Straczynski's Babylon 5. And we've got Babylon 5. Oh, this is the book of The Coming of Shadows. Is this a novel?
No, no, it's episode by episode.
It's episode by episode, right. So, but the book is called Coming of Shadows.
Give us that's the name of the series.
About the, oh, the series is also called Coming of Shadows.
Yes, it is.
Right. Okay, so that gives us a bit of an idea of where this sits in the series.
Yep.
It's the sort of seminal point in the series. Lucy, have you ever watched Babylon 5 before?
No. So I don't think I have.
You don't think you have?
I think maybe it was on once and I probably thought it was, it might have been Deep Space Nine though, who knows, but yeah.
It was on the same time as Deep Space Nine or a bit earlier.
It began before Deep Space Nine, but running at the same time. Yeah.
To the point where actors would disappear from one and appear on the other.
Yes.
and that would get noted in. So, Alex, have you ever watched Babylon 5 before?
Significantly, yeah. I decided to watch, like, because I have extra time now. I watched through the entire series a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, I'm quite familiar with the series and what its goings on.
Okay. And Gypsy, have you ever watched B5 before?
I've watched a little bit.
And
that's it.
Was that recently or was that?
We started doing a one for one while watching B5 and Star Trek. Angus and I have.
Next Gen.
Well, yeah, Star Trek Next Gen. And then apparently Next Gen won out because we watched the entire season and we're still making our way very slowly through B5.
And Angus, have you watched B5 before?
Yes, I have seen B5 multiple times. I do thoroughly enjoy it and this was no strange viewing for me.
So I don't want to say that the rating system may be a little bit biased, but there is a chance that Angus could be homeless if he doesn't give this a high score today.
There's a definite chance, yes.
Oh, I won't mind.
You still haven't let that Monkeys episode down, so let's not go there.
Oh, that episode was so bad.
I think that's the worst so far on Classic Cult TV Club. Yeah. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll go off and I guess we'll watch the episode and come back afterwards. Yeah. So, and
now I believe Lisa has some questions.
I have all the questions. I have many questions. Yeah. Would you like me to list off all my questions?
Yes.
So, who are those people? What is going on?
Yeah.
What's happening now? Why are those ladies got weird curtains on their faces? Because what's the deal with that spacecraft? And is it a rip-off of Red Dwarf? Why is there a hand coming out of the sun? What?
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead, Alex.
No, I just found it. The guys with weird hairdos invaded the planet of the guys who look like lizards and kept them as slaves for generations until they finally fought their way off. And the girls
They enslave as many people as they can.
Yeah.
Initially, and that's what I understand.
Yeah.
And the girls who are wearing curtains are psychic. They can read people's minds and they can connect with each other. And yeah, there's like a lot of psychics.
Yes.
In the series. For the
first time in this episode, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
So they're not, you know, old things. They're new. Yeah.
For this. I thought they were like a harem or something, but yeah.
In previous episodes. In previous episodes, like, if you watched, like, early episodes, you'd meet the Psycor, which are the human psychics, and they're part of an actual organised thing. And
yeah, every race kind of has their own psychics in a way. But the lizard people can't create psychics, so they try and bribe people to be psychics for them. Which you wouldn't know if you didn't watch the first season.
Yeah. I like the first season. That's the thing. I think the reason why Jeanette likes this so much is because of the huge overarching plot line. I do like the first season just because it also gives a vibe of this is a space station and just people living on a station. Here's their lives and here's how they do stuff in their day-to-day life. I like that season. And it also gives you information about, you know, the characters and the plot lines and the history of these races and so on.
Between the Earth and Minbari, you only see Delenn in this episode and she's got a bit of a head bone, but she's part human by this stage and there's a whole plot around her becoming part human. But humans in Minbari's had a war and that's through a mismanaged first contact situation. Humans were getting completely destroyed because they didn't have the technology that the Minbari had. And then at the last minute, the Minbari surrendered for no obvious reason. And that is being explored, and you find out at the beginning of the season why.
Firstly, I'll comment that obviously the episode by itself is clearly not enough to fully understand the entire universe.
Oh, wow. How'd you guess that?
Yeah. Who could have possibly guessed that? But it is, regardless, an interesting episode to start with, because at least you sort of get a feel for some of the things that are going on, and then you ask all the questions and get the answers to all those questions. Yeah.
And look, sarcasm aside, because I don't want to be flippant about, you know, this obvious revered cult classic, I just need to know, the only thing I need answers to is the hand coming out of the sun. Is that supposed to be a metaphor for something or is that a literal special effect?
He's been told he's the hand, that he will
become the emperor.
Become the emperor, and he's the hand from which will bring evil into the universe.
So this is part of a prophecy.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's symbolism for a prophecy.
Yes, it is.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's part of a prophecy dream that he had.
To be fair, I wasn't even completely convinced about that. I thought, okay, cool, there's just a weird thing they're doing.
Yeah.
It was the worst special effect. And we watched Blake 7, man.
It's how they try and draw their watches in, right? This is the episode that brought Jeanette in. What happened was the hand kind of actually reached out and grabbed her and just pulled her into the show. That's what they were trying.
Yeah. This was the first episode Jeanette ever saw too.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. That's what the hand is all about.
Yeah.
This episode is like your Blink.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Oh, and the spaceships, the stranger spider-like spaceships. There are multiple races out there that are sort of godlike races that used to control the galaxy. Now there are only two left and they're the Vorlons and the Shadows. So the Shadows are in hiding and the Vorlons are sort of in hiding, but they're wandering around in their spacesuits, so nobody knows who they really are. The whole thing is about this sort of, legendary ancient races that are still hovering around.
Can I just say, this is how I felt when we watched Fringe?
I did think that at the time when I was watching it tonight. I thought, this is what Alex was going through.
Yeah, I know it's badly because I at least recognised, oh, hey, there's a humans and this is the FBI and this is probably some science thing. Like, I'm not probably as lost as what you are with, at the very least, knowing, oh, these are the alien races that did this and these are the aliens. Yeah, I'm sure you'd be very lost indeed.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't until halfway through the episode that I realised which ones were the good guys and which ones were the bad guys because I didn't quite.
So which ones do you think are the good guys? Which do you think are the bad guys?
Well, I thought the dude in the white, I thought he was one of the good guys because he had like this Dalai Lama thing happening. Yeah. And then you've got the uber military guys, which I'm assuming because they were in the beginning credits, I figured they must have been the main characters, but they did seem kind of menacing. You've got to admit, like,
oh, they're military, yes.
Or maybe that's the anti-authoritism coming out in me.
Yeah, but then again, it's also like which military ones are you thinking in particular? Like, do you remember names at all? Like,
oh, the crew of the ship,
yeah,
the little shiny Arnold Rimmer uniforms.
With their ranting at Jakar at the beginning, like the whole telling him off for overreacting and being childish and whatnot. Yeah, I kind of see what you mean. Yeah,
yeah,
was very heavy-handed early on.
Yeah, Sheridan is at this stage very much doing his job.
How did people feel about, you know, this is fairly old. I mean, this is from 1994, and I think it went through to just sort of the early 2000s.
That long. It was like 92 to 97, I think.
No, it was 94 to 99, and then the
93 to 98.
93 to 98. Did it come across as if it was made before Christ? Or...
Special effects are a bit primitive.
How watchable did you find it?
I mean, it was watchable. The special effects really didn't mind me. Yeah.
There was a man coming out of the sun.
Yeah, but there's really weird shit coming out of, like, 90s TV shows all the time. Like, the special effects was trash.
Yeah.
Considering the time. It, like, in all seriousness, so long as the story could come across, it didn't really matter.
It also doesn't help that I read somewhere that they did the CGI for the 4:3 ratio screen, but when they did the DVD release, the footage for everything else was widescreen. But they lost the CGI models, so the CGI is basically a zoomed-in version of what they had on TV, which is why it's so terrible in terms of quality.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It shows.
Yeah.
This episode won a Hugo Award.
Oh, yeah.
And I've just got a quote here. One of the interesting things, B5, in fact, introduced me to the internet. It was very early on, there was a forum about it.
Oh, yeah.
Would answer questions and stuff. Oh, I think I'd have to choose The Coming of Shadows as the one episode I'd use to represent the series. This one episode came out so close to perfect, so close to what I saw in my head when I wrote it, that the difference is no difference at all. It has all the elements I'd feature in a B5 discussion: the CGI, the characterizations, the complexity, the politics, the language, the performance. So this is JMS's favourite episode.
JMS being the producer, well, not producer, the writer.
The show writer.
Creator. Yeah.
He sort of wrote about, I don't know, maybe a third of the episodes, and, you know, so they had guest writers, kind of like modern models.
But third season, he wrote every single episode.
Yeah.
Okay, so Alex, how do you think it shows up, you know, compared with modern television?
I think, because I watched the entire series all the way through recently, I always think it's basically, it eases into its heavy plot lines in comparison to, for example, a lot of the prestige online-only series. They start off okay, we need to basically start off with 10 episodes. Each episode is about the huge overarching plotline. Whereas I feel like the first season of Babylon 5 eases into that, with some of it being this overarching plotline, some of it just being life on the station, and it eases into the huge galactic warfare style stuff, rather than just throwing you out into the deep end. I mean, it doesn't feel that way when she just does this episode, but yeah, it's sort of kind of a transitionary thing, I think, where... Unlike today, where it's basically, here's some lore, automatically. You start off more smoothly with Babylon 5 than you do with modern series, and it's more plot-driven than older series. So, yeah, it's kind of like a intermediate stage, but it still holds up because the characterization is really good. Like, I still have certain specific scenes in my mind and certain specific lines and speeches and so forth that I just keep coming back to because they're just so well-written and so well-performed.
Yeah.
But sometimes the acting is awful, isn't it? Sometimes.
It's a minor acting.
Yeah. So it's done to be over the top, but, you know.
So, Lisa, what did you think? How did that sort of hold up compared with modern television shows that you like?
Oh, look, I think if I gave it a chance and I started from the beginning and watched it through, I think I'd probably, to me, a lot of the political intrigue and the dialogue and things like that, it seemed pretty much on par with today. I wouldn't rank it up there with, you know, some of the masterclass TV shows, but, you know, it would probably be something like, I guess, a Next Gen or something that you could feel comfortable watching. But I don't think I've watched enough to be able to say whether it would be a next gen or a Deep Space Nine. I'm not sure which way it would lie for me yet.
You've got to get to know the characters more and get build that, like with Fringe. You get to care about the characters. Love the politics in it. And it is quite radical. Definitely, the politics.
Yeah. Okay, there's one episode, Lisa, where the aliens get a plague and they're trying to solve the plague. And the climax of the episode is they can't find a cure and the entire race dies out.
Oh!
they all die. It's
they all die.
Everybody dies.
Yeah.
I think it was the first show that actually had a CGI as its main spaceship.
It was.
So previous to that, everything had been done using miniature models.
Yeah.
So this is the first time they actually went to CGI. And it was only a few years later that Star Trek went down the same route. So, Angus, what did you think about how this holds up?
Honestly, I love it. I love the story. I love the characters. I kind of love the world, just everything about it. But it does fall a bit flat in terms of the visual quality. I don't know if that's just because we were watching a low-resolution version of it or if there is either resolution versions available. I don't know. It does seem old and slightly dated.
In some regards.
Yeah, in quite a couple. It does have that very grainy, I don't know. It does feel old. It feels old.
Okay, I'll ask Gypsy this time. Gypsy, what's the rating of this out of 5, do you think?
Oh, controversy. Asking someone else to do the rating.
Angus is clearly biased. Gypsy's not so biased.
You're just sick of hearing 5 out of 5 and 7 out of 7.
So out of 6.5.
Okay, personally, it gets 2 separate ratings for 2 separate reasons. I would give it a 6 because I enjoy watching it with Angus. He really enjoys it, and watching the show through his eyes is enjoyable. I do enjoy watching it for that, in that aspect. Mm. Watching it on my own, I would not do, personally. I don't care much for the show, I guess. I don't know. It hasn't pulled me in as much as it does pull other people in, and I totally get that, taste is a big thing about it. So, I mean, I guess I'd give it maybe a 2 or a 3.
Oh, okay.
if I was going to watch it myself, I would probably go, let's watch Star Trek instead.
And that's the difference between old love and new love, isn't it? So, new love, it's like, I just love watching you love it so much. And then, if that was me and Adrian, I'd be like, can we put something on we both want to watch? And you just watch this in your own time when I'm not in the room.
That's quite interesting that you say that, because that was a suggestion initially. But no, Angus was really keen on showing me, so I am
suffering it.
Sitting through it.
I do also say that, to me, love is when there's a show that you both really enjoy watching and you'll wait till the other one's around before you watch it. You won't jump ahead. So, there's a lot to be said about TV shows and love.
I'm more than happy to wait for Angus to watch this.
Just specifically this show, not any other.
Yeah. Every other show I skip ahead.
We used to record this at sort of 11 at night, and then later they moved it to 3 in the morning.
It was always 11 at night.
11 at night.
I used to stop and cut out all the ads, and then we'd watch it together.
I'm thinking of Greatest American Hero. Yes.
You're thinking of Thunderbirds as well.
Believe it or not, we're thinking of Greatest American Hero.
Yeah, I just love the fact that Australian networks aside, no, we're not going to show sci-fi at a reasonable hour. You have to tape this stuff, but it's on late at night. Geez, American sitcoms, they just get primetime releases, but no, sci-fi, you got to tape it.
Yeah.
Oh, look, and how many other really classic shows were they doing the same thing with years ago? I got told about Arrested Development, but it was like, you can watch it on TV, but it's on at 2 in the morning. But it's worth watching, And things like Curb Your Enthusiasm never took off too well in Australia because it used to be on at midnight. It just never got the shot that it deserved.
Stimpy.
Ren and Stimpy, yes.
There was a lot of old school amazing cartoons that you weren't able to watch at regular times. So Ren and Stimpy, Johnny Bravo, Samurai Champloo and Samurai Jack as well, and things of that nature. Even Cowboy Bebop was at maybe 9 or 10 o'clock at night on random channels generally Cartoon Network, but the ABC got their hands on it. But yeah, anything fun is generally late at night.
Over in the UK, they had Star Trek straight after the news. Straight after the news, they would have B5 or, and what was the other one? Farscape.
Yeah, Farscape only got a good release because it was made half by Channel 9, and therefore the first season promoted it. It's like, yeah, this is our show, we made it, and that's why I got a prompt release. Otherwise, it wouldn't have.
The only time I ever saw Farscape on TV, on free-to-air TV, though, was at 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. It was never usually on, or it was probably on at, like, yeah, 11 o'clock or 3 in the morning or something.
That's right, yes. Oh, one of the other things about B5 that was, I guess, revolutionary was the storylines. You know, so at the time, syndicated TV in the US was all independent episodes. So when Babylon 5 got syndicated, they would just be playing all the episodes all out of order. Because nobody
showed stuff in the US.
That's just how they showed stuff in the US. It was all And so this was a change in the US. So of course the UK had been doing this for a long time.
Because the way the UK and US TV works completely differently.
That's
You have like a gajillion independent networks which just want program by the bushel. And so they just put whatever they can, and so that's got a different ethic to having a national network as you would in the UK.
And episodes were made really quickly. You know, they didn't have that quality that, say, television today. And that's, I think, the big difference is that right now American shows put a lot more care and quality.
Yeah. And also it feels like, say, they don't have different writers come in and do the thing, whereas JMS did the entire pretty much third and fourth seasons.
Yes.
And so compared it to an average drama series, which would have, like, different writers doing different bits at different times, which is probably the norm back then. Whereas now we basically have a team and they're doing basically one narrative and splitting it into hour-long chunks.
So while we're talking about, you mentioned America's Greatest Hero, do we have that on the list of episodes to watch?
Is that coming up?
It has been discussed.
Yes, I had Thunderbirds on, but maybe I'll change it for Greatest Hero.
I did want to bring to everyone's attention while we're here, we did have some requests come through on the Facebook page, the Gawler Broadcasting Association Facebook page, that was based, which I think was
a series,
with Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Jessica Hyndman, I think her name is. Yes.
I was reading an article about that the other day and thinking, it's 2003, I think, but we could do it as a special. Definitely.
No, it's 2000.
1999 to 2001.
Okay.
So we can get it in for next year.
Sure.
And I think there was also a request for, I'd never heard of it, is it Garth Marenghi's?
Oh, yeah. Garth Marenghi's stuff. Yeah, it's a series that was done like 2003, and it was it was presented as though it was an old series from the 80s because it looked that way, but it was made in 2003, and it's ridiculous because it's hard to explain, but it's really trashy. I'm sure you'd laugh your ass off you when you see it. But yeah, it's a good series.
All I knew about it is that it's got Richard Ayoade from IT Crowd. And I think, Ayoade? Is that right?
Ayoade.
Ayoade, did I get it right?
You say it the same way that Benedict Cumberbatch says penguins.
Could you say that three times quickly, please?
I decided to give it a stab and hoped I wouldn't be mocked.
The joke is that Richard Ayoade plays somebody who plays somebody in the show, if that makes sense. And the guy playing in the show can't act. And that's a really good joke because it's very stilted, very over the top because he can't act. And that's the joke.
Uh-huh.
That's his character on the show.
Add those to the list then if we can as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do we have coming up, Jeanette?
Do we have actual listeners?
Yeah.
Probably so.
Hello, listeners.
Hello.
Next month, May, we are doing Owl Day, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, yay. Now I can talk about how it compares to the radio and book and film versions.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, I'll make sure I bring my towel.
Yes, sure.
Yeah.
Already.
I'll bring my towel. Okay, that's not like his joke, does it? No.
So Alex may be wearing his towel.
Yeah, I know.
You'll have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we'll wrap up.
Yes.
And that was a classic cult TV club.
Recording during lockdown.
Recording during lockdown.
Yeah.
And next time, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And everybody say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Stay safe.
Bye.
Stay well. Bye.
Bye-bye. Take care of yourselves.
So that was Lisa, Alex, Jeanette, Gypsy, Angus, and Justin. Okay. See you later.